This is the Secrets of Attorney Marketing podcast from Speakeasy Marketing. Discover how to enhance your reputation as an attorney and outmarket your competitors. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast and post a review.
Hello, this is Richard Jacobs with the Secrets of Attorney Marketing podcast. I have attorney Freya Allen Schaffner. She's with Schaffner & Associates. So we're going to talk to her about her practice, but especially this year, you know, with the COVID situation, what's she doing differently? How's she faring? And what, you know, what advice she would have for other firms? So Freya, thanks for coming.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Yeah, tell me a bit about your practice. You know, how long and what areas do you focus on?
I've been practicing for a long time, more than 20 years. And the focus of my practice, our goal, our mission, is to take care of small businesses. And by small businesses, I mean very small, even nano businesses, side gig, or I think our largest client has annual sales of about $100 million, and our smallest client has annual sales of about $75,000.
Oh, wow. What any particular kind of business do you focus on, or are your clients in all kinds of areas?
We have clients from all walks of life. I represent a disaster recovery firm, an elevator contractor. We have a lumber yard and a hardware store, and we also have manicurists, hairdressers, spa owners, physicians, realtors, dentists. I could go on.
Wow. Okay. How did you get into this? Was this when you first started practicing law? Was this your deliberate decision to go into this area, or did you fall into it?
It was a very deliberate decision. I started in business for myself when I was 23. And eventually, my husband, my brother-in-law, my sister, and I started a specialty dental products company. We had patents, we had trademarks, we had copyrights, we had employees, all that. But we were tiny. One day I was looking through a dental products magazine and I saw that there was somebody out there who was infringing on our patent. So my husband and I went in to see our patent lawyer to see about getting that stopped. And we drank tepid tea from very fancy china cups and we wrote a very large check. And after nothing had happened, and I had worked out a deal with the infringer myself, my husband decided that I was going to have to go to law school, and what I would do would be to take care of small businesses. And here I am.
Oh, very cool. What's the business climate look like? How has it changed for small businesses? Has it gotten, you know, better for them, worse for them? Does it depend on the industry?
Oh, it absolutely depends on the industry. Everything is just topsy-turvy. My disaster recovery client, they've got more business than they can handle. My software clients, very, 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 very busy. And then, you know, my restaurants here in Massachusetts were closed. And my spas and my gyms and my manicures were all closed. So for everyone, there's been a practically show-stopping challenge. Even my companies that are so busy have challenges. And there's also, at least amongst my client base, we're focusing on the idea that this is an opportunity. And it's an opportunity for businesses to strip away that which isn't efficient, that which doesn't work, and to step into new ideas and into new markets. And that's also been what we've been doing here at the law firm, because when it comes right down to it, we're a small business as well.
Have any of the business owners you represent wanted to sue the state or sue the city for the shutdowns because they thought maybe they were treated unfairly? Like in Texas here, the bars have been closed when other businesses have been open. So I know that they had filed suit. And, you know, some of the business owners believe this was a taking of rights that shouldn't have been done.
That's an interesting question, and I'm aware of what's been going on in Texas. It's a little bit different here in Massachusetts in that Governor Baker resisted to a great extent the urge to make executive orders And what we found is that a lot of the regulations regarding shutdowns and mask wearing, et cetera, first came from the cities and towns. I live in a town that had a very early spike. We're small, but we had a very early spike of 72 cases. So before there was anything said statewide about wearing masks, our town had a mask order. And the fact that, what do I want to call it, regulations regarding distancing and wearing of masks has been on a much smaller basis. So we haven't had that. Churches are a different thing. There's a lot of concern there about why were the churches closed when the liquor stores were open. But I haven't had any of that from my clients. And my clients are focused more on understanding that, well, you can sue the state and you can ask for damages, but you're going to spend many years litigating and looking back as opposed to taking hold of what's happened and making the best of it going forward.
Yeah, it makes sense. So I'm sure a lot of your businesses have gotten leaner or pivoted, but what are some strategies or maybe case studies, you know, without names, of businesses that have actually turned themselves around and are doing better than ever, or at least they're surviving happily?
Well, I can give you one example. I represent a personal trainer, and he is part of a very small studio in a suburb. And this particular client of mine had just gotten married that year. They bought a house. He had no student debt, but a lot of financial obligations. And the day before Governor Baker announced the statewide orders that would include the closing of gyms and studios alike, he called me in a panic. But we talked for a good couple hours. And when we finished, he called up his partner and shared what we'd talked about. And pretty much in the blink of an eye, they announced to their entire client base that their schedule would continue, as always, via video, and that clients could train from their homes using whatever equipment they had in their homes on their usual schedule. They also added more text communication, diet consultation. And this particular trainer then reached out to clients that he had previously in another town who couldn't work out with him because it was too far to drive. And now he could work out with them on video. And he's added clients from other states. So through the pandemic, he was making more money than he'd been making before. And that has continued, even though in Massachusetts, there's a pretty broad limited opening. They're able to have the studio open now. Many of his clients have decided to continue on video. And then there are some who are just too far away, like Pittsburgh, for heaven's sakes, who are going to stay on video forever. So that's the quickest pivot we've had. But most everyone has figured out a way.
Yeah, that's great. That's amazing that you can change your business and do even better during this time. That's really cool.
It is cool. One of the things that we've seen here in our practice, when this happened, I thought, okay, take care of small businesses. I'm going to see an uptick in bankruptcies. And we set sail, if you will, to be able to handle a greater volume of bankruptcy cases. What I didn't expect is the remarkable increase in business startups.
Really? What kinds?
All kinds of tiny businesses. I had one young man called me. He had graduated from college in February and needed to make money because he had only a 6-month deferral on his student loans. So he started up, helping people start e-commerce businesses. And he had originally said that he wanted to stretch things out on a payment plan, but then it turned out he got his first client. So we had to hustle to get him ready. So that's one example. I have another woman who decided she would turn her minivan into a school bus because there's school buses. And so she can take 4 students in her van. It's a 9-passenger van. She can take 4 students. So she added that.
Oh, wow. So for a good number of people, it's been actually a time of innovation, and maybe they're happier because they're innovating and doing things.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That is what I'm seeing. I just returned from a meeting with clients out in Pittsburgh who have a farm, and they really, nothing much has changed for them. They're actually outside of Pittsburgh and in a community that's been hardly affected by the pandemic. But their main concern was the health and safety of the people who are involved in running the farm, and what's the best way as it gets colder to continue to be able to have periodic in-face meetings, or I should say face-to-face meetings. So it is, like I said, I think it's a tremendous opportunity for change, for innovation.
What about in your firm? Do you speak to other attorneys and other firms, and what are some of the things you've had to do in your firm to get along?
Well, we were very fortunate. I am a little bit of a tech geek, and I decided in the last century that I wanted to have all my documents available on a computer, and that I didn't want to be tied down to a file room. So we started scanning documents in 2000, and by 2 years or 3 years ago, I have been able to access anything I've written since the beginning of my career from anywhere. So we had migrated to complete cloud storage well before the pandemic. So for us, moving to a virtual working environment was simply a matter of me sending out a group chat saying, okay, from now on, coming into the office is optional, and I would prefer that you work from home unless there's some real need to come in here, and we will have our staff meeting at 2:00 every afternoon on Zoom. And that was it.
Very cool.
It was very cool. So for us, the change has been really in being able to take care of the new businesses that are starting up, and also working with our existing clients to help them migrate to a virtual means of communication, helping them work on how do you set up a Zoom meeting? When do we have a Zoom meeting? Would you prefer that it be on Skype? But helping our clients to see that you can meet with me just as often as you're used to, just not in three dimensions.
Were you doing new client intakes by having them come into the office before this? Or were you doing it over Zoom even back then?
A variety, depending on the client. My clients who are in the tech fields have been preferring virtual meetings for a few years. And one of my not-for-profits, we've been meeting on Skype for 10 years. So a variety, but now new client intakes happen on Zoom or any other video platform, whatever the client has, I'll use.
Yeah, that's great. What do you notice about those kind of intakes? I know you've been doing them for so long, it may be hard to tell the difference. A lot of attorneys haven't, and now they are, but what have you noticed this year with Zoom or Skype intakes?
I find that it's actually easier to stay on topic. When I'm meeting with a client or a potential client face-to-face, there's a tendency to get chatty and to drift further afield. I find that both in myself and in the person I'm speaking with. So I find that in a video session, it's easier to stay on topic. One thing that I do miss is being able to appreciate the full range of body language. It's a little tougher to read someone that you don't know when you're in two dimensions. So that's taken a little bit of an adjustment. But my close rate is the same.
And okay.
And speaking more about the law firm marketing, since the pandemic, we have been much, much more deliberate about our marketing techniques. I've been far more aggressive on social media, and I've added a text capacity so that we have a dedicated text number so people can reach out to us. And with that texting capacity, I can ask for reviews. So we're adding, nice. We're adding a, would you please give us a review to what we usually do. I also have hired a part-time, we call her a client hospitality ambassador. And her job is to reach out to people regularly just to check in, see how they're doing, find out if there's anything they need. And that could be anything from, you know, I need contact-free hardware delivery to I want to upgrade my estate plan. That's her job. So we're being
that's very smart.
Much more deliberate in reaching out to existing clients and being much more conscientious about our lead to client funnel.
So when you reach out to the clients, are you getting more business that way? Are you are they appreciative? Are they afraid to hear from you? Like, what's it like for the hospitality person?
Very appreciative. And the woman that we hired actually has retired, and she was in a customer service position, high pressure customer service position before. So she is very adept at making a cold call. Although what we do have her do is she reaches out by text first to introduce herself and then invite them to a chat. So
that makes sense.
Very, very, very appreciative. On the other end, we also have now a part-time staff member who is monitoring far more closely our receivables. So if someone is approaching the end of the month, he reaches out to find out what's going on and if there's any way we can help.
Oh, what's happened, Mike?
Perfect.
What are some tricks there?
It's been he's done very well. As a matter of fact, he has eliminated our receivables. So we went.
Wow.
Yeah.
Was it carrot or stick? Like what's what was effective in reducing
the complete carrot? He treats it as a sales call. In other words,
what's an example of someone that has, you know, had a problem and he was able to get them to pay? And you know what did it? You know, what are a few examples?
The biggest one we had, it was the largest problem was simply a client who was afraid that they were going to run out of money. And they had decided that they just simply weren't going to pay any bills. And he talked about how much we appreciated having them as client and how much we were there to help. And then he gave the client the opportunity to explain if she were going to take care of this bill, what would be the best way for her to do that? And her answer was half now and half in a week. Okay.
So then you said, can you do that?
Right. But mainly it was a matter of listening and just listening and waiting until she had gotten it all out. Sort of a customer problem resolution technique, listen, acknowledge, resolve.
No, that's great.
So it you know, in that case, it turned out that particular client really her refusal to pay was entirely based on her fear that this was the end of the world.
It makes sense. Or if you're low on money, it's embarrassing. You know, you don't want to say, well, can I pay you half because I'm going through a hard time? So if you enable those conversations and make them easy and show empathy, I'm sure it's a lot better.
It absolutely is. And throughout my career in business, I have had my accounts payable people focus on the fact that this is an opportunity to turn a client who may be on the fence into one of our biggest supporters. And it's all in how that conversation is handled. And the idea that to approach the conversation, first of all, as a conversation, not a confrontation, and to use it as an opportunity to explore with the other person the way to approach a challenge.
How about on reviews? A lot of attorneys I speak to, they're afraid that they'll get a bad review, so they don't ask anyone. What do you think and what have you observed?
Well, you have to have reviews. And I understand that nobody wants to get slammed on Yelp. And there are ways to manage if that happens. But what we do is our texting software allows us to request a review, and then it gives us the opportunity, if the review is less than stellar, to address that with the client privately rather than have it show up on Facebook or Google or anywhere else. So before the review goes up, we get an alert. And if the review, like I said, is less than stellar and it happens, again, that's our opportunity. And that falls to the customer, the hospitality ambassador, to call up and find out what went wrong and what that client would like to see from us in the future.
Are you able to turn around a lot of those reviews, or like what happens?
Well, here's the interesting thing. We haven't had any.
You mean you haven't had any what? Bad reviews? Or
I haven't had any since we put it in place.
Good.
I can tell you though, I've had clients take me to task about things, certainly. You know, they sent me an email at 2:00 and I didn't respond until 6:00, that kind of thing. But I think that we work hard on making ourselves available and open to that kind of a conversation so that it can be handled before it becomes an issue. And that's something, you have to accept the fact, and this is going to set some attorneys' hair on fire, you have to be a sales-driven environment if you're going to make it as a law firm. If you're not a sales-driven environment, you're probably not going to make it. Here in Massachusetts, there are, frankly, just too many attorneys, and there's not enough business to go around. So if your firm is not focused on making the most of every opportunity, you're going to have a hard time.
No, that's true. I'm preaching that all the time. Yeah. The old way of doing things, unfortunately, has to change. So you have to put on the salesman's hat and always make sure that your pipeline's full of clients. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you have to be careful to make sure that you're accepting the right kind of client, because taking a client simply because you need that retainer right then, right now, is not good business. And those are the times when one can end up with a very dissatisfied client, a very bad situation. So it's important, even when one is extremely concerned about paying the bills that month, to, like you said, keep the pipeline full, but also make sure that as you move through the funnel, your selection of client plays to your strengths and not your weaknesses. This is no time to try to get good at something you don't know anything about.
Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I'm not sure if it's true, but I'm curious about the restaurant industry in particular. Maybe other people are. What's been happening with them? Are they, I guess because they've been highlighted in the news a lot, are they doing okay? Are they all changing to takeout only? Like, what have you noticed with them?
Whew, all over the place. And obviously, I don't have any restaurant clients who are part of large chains. I noticed today, very recently, Golden Corral filed for Chapter 11 protection. Well, Golden Corral relies on those, big food bars, where you go and you help yourself, and they keep staff to a minimum. So that makes it tough. For the restaurants that I work with the most, they were able to pivot very quickly to a takeout, delivery, contactless pickup model. We were helped out by the fact that restaurants were allowed to sell beer and wine to go. It was a big help. So what I'm seeing now, because restaurants in Massachusetts are open on, with restrictions, but they're open. But what I'm seeing in the restaurants with which I work most closely, that they are still really pushing their takeout delivery and the contactless pickup, and not pushing so hard on come on back in.
Of course, is that a mistake, you think, or what's your thoughts there?
I think it's smart because we don't, you know, this is going to be our first full winter of pandemic, and we have no idea what's going to happen. But what we do know is that when people are stuck at home, they get real darn tired of making sourdough bread. And yeah. Cooking with the whole family is a great adventure when you first start, but then there are all those dishes from every single meal over and over and over again. And it's just a whole lot easier to have the food show up on your doorstep in containers that you can put into the recycling when you're done, rather than try to make your five-year-old clear the table. So
yeah, my kids are becoming DoorDash experts, unfortunately, but yeah.
There you go, DoorDash, Grubhub. We, in my hometown, we didn't have DoorDash or Grubhub, but boy, we do now, and we have Slice, all kinds of delivery services. One of my clients was doing family-owned business, pizza shop, doing really, really, really well. And there's a restaurant space downtown that they bought and converted and had their grand opening February 1st, keeping both locations open. And they were the first ones to get Grubhub, DoorDash, and Slice. Because they thought originally that, you know, the restaurant downtown with the seats was going to be their flagship. And as it turns out, it's their pizza shop in the old location that's floating the boat, if you will. And enough so that they're able to close on Sundays.
Oh, wow. That's great.
It is great. And like I said, it's family owned. And they did tighten up on their staff, and the family's working longer hours, but they're doing it. So I think, you know, for the small restaurant, again, it's easier. I look at the big guys around here, Del Frisco's part of a chain. Part of what they've done is they're outside. Who knows how they're going to manage that in January? I think they're hanging on. The ones that we're seeing close here in Boston are the bars, the places where students went to drink and, oh, maybe get a burger. They're closing because we don't have that many students here in Boston. They're all home. Harvard went all virtual. A lot of the schools are. So The lack of tourists and the lack of students has been a real challenge for everyone here in Boston.
So, back to legal clients, back to your clients, are you telling them to negotiate with vendors? You know, did they go through a period of that this year? And if so, was that helpful to lean them up, or did they just have to let staff go?
It's been a combination of things. We've a number of my clients are located on very expensive shopping streets. And what we found across the board, there were just a few major landlords in this area. And across the board, the landlords have been willing to negotiate, willing to reduce rents, willing to forbear on rents with the idea that we'll take a look and see what's going on in 2022. And if things are
2022, wow.
Yeah, really, to say, okay, I'm going to, I'll take half rent, I'll take 25% rent, and then we'll revisit in a year or so. And, if you're doing well, then maybe you can give some of this back. And if you're not, we'll talk about extending it. But some money is better than no money.
Well, that's smart. I would think that a lot of landlords, I don't know, it wouldn't be like that, but that's great that the ones you've run into are.
Well, again, we're not dealing with, for my clients, they're not renting space from, large multinationals. They're renting.
I think if more landlords did what you guys do, reached out early, and tried to help and say, what can we do to help? Things would be better. Like, I'm not in commercial real estate, but I just remember throughout the years driving by a location that shut down and it's vacant for like 2 years. And I'm thinking, what's the landlord doing? Why don't they get someone in there? Did they try to work with the business that's gone? You know, what happened?
Well, we have to face the fact, the pandemic or no, brick and mortar retail is going through a major transition. And very often that's what you see when you see a, you know, an empty strip mall or empty storefronts on an elegant shopping street. That's a reflection of a sea change in the way people buy. And in general, high school girls like to go and go shopping and look at things. But more and more, they go to the store to look and then buy later online. So that's, you know, it's tough. And there's absolutely no doubt that the commercial real estate market is going through and will continue to go through a major shakeout because there was that change that was going on. And now you have the fact that, well, like our office, I see absolutely no reason to maintain the offices and conference room that I have here in Boston's Prudential Tower. I can keep an address here in the Prudential Tower, but I don't need all this real estate and I'm not going to keep it because we're going to stay virtual. We work better virtual, I think. Again, like I said, with prospects, it's easier to stay on task, on point, on Zoom, and it's the same thing with my staff. There is a whole lot less water cooler chat. And without the commute, which in the Boston area is heinous, people have more time. My staff has more time. They're better rested and they are logging in earlier and finishing up earlier. That's one other thing I have been careful with, is to make sure that my staff is not diddling away on the computer from 6 a.m. until 3 a.m. Office hours are office hours, and after hours are after hours.
For new hires, though, they're coming into a different culture, different environment. So what do you see as the difference between people that, you know, were with you before this happened and people that are coming on board now?
My experience with this is limited to one person. I had an intern this summer who I did not see in three dimensions until the day before his internship ended. And I did not, except for the two-dimensional aspect, I went about his introduction and training exactly as I would have done if he had been in the office. Oh, one other thing that we have done is so we're virtual. On Fridays, we call it a mini retreat. And Fridays are dedicated to development. Staff development, office development, and what I do is I rotate through the day to different groups. I start out with, you know, we have an overall client status, then we move into a marketing meeting, then from 11 to 1, I do substantive training, we break for lunch from 1 to 2, and then starting at 2 o'clock, I have the meetings with individuals. And work with each, you know, with each individual on their projects, which I do daily, but this is on a deeper level. And that's been a big help.
Like a good focus time, you mean?
Yes, it's a good focus time. And it I make sure then that everything is running as it should be. And this is the, in addition to the daily meetings, people have a chance to be all together, if you will. And we do give people the option of attending that meeting in person. My one requirement is, or the one thing about that is that we do that in person, we socially distance, but I leave the mask wearing to the comfort of the individual.
Okay, that's good.
Generally, people choose to wear them. I get no grumbling because it's a choice.
Last question. Because you deal with a lot of businesses, you probably have a good feeling of the pulse of what's going on, you know, throughout talking to all the businesses you work with. What's it like now, you think, in the minds of all your customers? And do you sense that things are getting more hopeful, less hopeful? What's the zeitgeist of your clients right now?
My clients, they are very focused on making do, if you will. I don't find that, I don't have any clients who are thinking that the sky is falling. I don't have any clients who are afraid of what lies ahead, even those that I am, you know, with whom I'm discussing bankruptcy and very thankful for the Small Business Reorganization Act, or the ones that are doing well. For the most part, people are keeping their planning on a little bit shorter time frame. Things like, oh, gee, you know, we're going to move from a rented location to buying a location. Not so much right now. It's more about figuring out how can I maximize the opportunities that are here, and what can I do to adapt in this environment? So I'm not saying that people are hopeful, but for the most part, my clients are past the panic stage.
And excellent.
We're okay. We're doing well. Very deliberate in focusing with my clients and my staff on what is the good news? What is the best thing you've heard today? What is the best thing that happened today? What can you do tomorrow that will be good?
That's a great way to look at it. As I say, you know, what can I do instead of I can't? So that's excellent. Well, very good. Freya, I don't know if, you know, I appreciate all your knowledge. You're doing a great job with your firm. You got a lot of innovative things going on. What's the best way for, you know, listeners to find out more about your firm and you?
Well, I would say that the easiest way is just to type my name into any search engine. That's Freya, F-R-E-Y-A, Schaffner, S-H-O-F-F-N-E-R. And I should pop up with all kinds of links that you can click on. You can also follow me on social media at Schaffner Associates. That's the at sign. My last name, S-H-O-F-F-N-E-R, Associates. And I'll pop up all over the place there. You'll find me on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, everywhere.
Okay. Well, very good.
And old-fashioned way, you can call me at 617-369-0111. Our receptionists work 24/7.
Oh, wow. Very good. Well, Freya, thanks for coming on and providing your knowledge, especially during this time. So I appreciate you being here. Thank you.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Richard. This has been so much fun.
You've been listening to the Secrets of Attorney Marketing podcast from Speakeasy Marketing. Call 888-225-8594 or email rj@speakeasymarketinginc.com to enhance your reputation and outmarket your competitors. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast and post a review.